Welcome, my friends. Welcome to the Space Game Junkie podcast. We have a fantastic guest this week, known in the forums as S Charmers. I always thought it was Charmers, but S Charmers, also known as Chase Dahl. Did I say that right?
You did.
Okay, good. He was the first person I thought of when talking about the demise of LucasArts, which happened last Wednesday. And there seem to be two minds of this killing. Some see it as a mercy killing because apparently they haven't put anything good out in years, which is fair. And some people, like me, see it as, you know, I chose to look at their legacy from the 90s, and that's how I choose to remember them. And so I feel like I've lost, like, a valued friend.
Well, the problem is that you can't get the stockholders to keep being rosy about the legacy of the 90s.
Yeah.
Because you saw that spreadsheet that I sent you, right? I put a graph there. That's the Metacritic scores of the LucasArts games from 93 to present. And it's not the review scores, because I don't trust how those are skewed, but I went with the user scores, where people actually voted what they thought of the game. So that way it's not subject to that weird 7-9 scale skew.
I'll have to see if we can put this in the show notes, because it's a pretty good chart. I guess you don't have a copy, Chase, I apologize, but I'll put it.
No, I'll make a screenshot of the graph, and you can just stick that in the article. It's easier that way. But basically what happened is they had about an 8.5 average score from the users in 93, and then they squandered that down to about a 6.8 here at the end. So, you know, it's the truth of, if you're not getting an 85 on Metacritic, you're dead.
Yeah.
And
there's a study, decline too, according to this chart.
Well, and Mickey Mouse has had a pretty strong history with having success with outsourced titles, because they're pretty loose about their characters and outsourcing that to game studios.
Okay.
You know, where it's like, well, you can make this Mickey Mouse game, you know, it play by our Bible, but you guys can develop that, right, outside. And then they've
Kingdom
had good
Hearts,
success
yeah.
with that. But
yeah.
Yeah. And then with the internal developed stuff that Lucas was doing, it was all, have you noticed it's all like repackages lately of like Lucas's greatest hits of this era or this type of game or
they were
whatever.
Doing back,
or like
they were doing
of things.
Back, they were doing that back then.
LucasArts.
Oh, they were,
classics. Yeah. Yeah, you'd go into Babbage's and you'd see that big box with six discs and just air, and it would be like, you know, Day of the Tentacle and Maniac Mansion and a couple other games, and it was like $20.
Oh, exactly.
How much would that go for now? Now, I'm looking at these user scores, and this can't be right. How is X-Wing Alliance over X-Wing versus TIE Fighter? Say what
X-Wing
you want.
X-Wing over TIE Fighter wasn't that great.
It was better than Alliance, I thought.
No. I mean, in terms of... That was back in the mid 90s when everybody was going, okay, Quake style deathmatch is going to be that's the big thing. That's going to rule the world. Everything's got to be multiplayer. And basically in X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, you could just take a TIE interceptor, kick its speed down to 2/3, and you could outturn and outshoot everything. Mm-hmm. So it was a weak multiplayer. It was also the first of like the direct play titles, so it was kind of flaky in terms of that. The Balance of Power expansion was okay, but
I was about to ask really, about that. I haven't played it.
But it was more disparate missions meant for co-op than any kind of coherent story. So, you know, for all its flaws and the fact that it was completely rushed and chopped at the end, X-Wing Alliance is okay. It's as a single player experience.
Let's go back even further than that.
Yeah.
What was the first LucasArts game y'all remember playing?
Rescue on Fractalis and Eidolon and Coronis Rift.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember my mom driving the car, and I had bought Coronis Rift, and I'm reading the manual in the passenger seat, like on the way home, and I'm like, oh yeah. So
yeah. I completely skipped the 8-bit, so no Ball Blazer, nothing like that. It was Amiga days, picking up Battlehawks 1942 and their Finest Hour. And, you know, speaking of manuals, that was back in the day when it was, you know, you basically got a World War II History 101 book. So those are the ones I remember.
Yeah. Like nice spiral.
Yeah.
Bound.
Their Finest Hour was the first for mine as well. That was,
I think I still have that manual somewhere just after, you know, 20 years. It's just because it was just too good to give up.
God, I remember those manuals, but those were fantastic games. That's when it was still called Lucasfilms. That was Lucasfilm.
Yeah. Lucasfilm Games.
Yeah, that was before Totally Games, I guess, right?
Yeah, Totally Games didn't come until Lawrence Holland broke off on his own.
Okay. I wasn't fully sure.
So I see Labyrinth was an adventure game that they did that was in the Zork style, where it was actually like an Infocom text adventure. But then they had, they would also have some things that indicated what the future would be with, like, Maniac Mansion, because some of the graphics that would come in looked like that cartoon style that they were doing. But at its heart, it was a text parser game. I remember PHM Pegasus.
Yeah.
I had no idea that LucasArts made that
on the Commodore. I had that. Because EA put that out.
LucasArts made that?
Yeah, it was. It came in one of those flat EA boxes.
Yeah, I had that game. That was such a good one.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, there was that and Strike Fleet. And, you know, this is a thing that I notice in here is George Lucas has a really big hard-on for World War II, right? And, like, the dogfighting and the Battle of Britain stuff and that. And of course, we saw that in the Death Star Trench Run, right, the way that was filmed. And he's spoken at great length about he wanted to have the starfighters look like Mustangs and Messerschmitts.
Yeah,
and,
that was basically midway to him. So that whole sudden turnaround to the good guys.
Yep. And looking at the games, right? So you've got Strike Fleet, which is like a World War II naval simulation thing. Yeah. And then Battlehawks 1942. I mean, that's a no-brainer, right? Where that's coming from. Secret Weapons of the Luftwaffe.
Oh, God.
And yeah,
I still get tingly when I hear that. I love that game. So I'm drooling a little bit right now.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at the types of games that are going on, there's three kinds of games. There's the adventure game that's in like a whimsical fairy tale land, right? Like the Monkey Island stuff and
Maniac Mansion
and those things, right? But it's really story centric. But they are the ones that brought the Scum engine, right, and the whole we're going to do a cartoony game that's no longer a text adventure. It kind of is, but we made it point and click. So they brought that about, and then of course, where did that go from there? You know, we've got the guys over at Double Fine, and they're still doing that today. And then Telltale Games, who of course have had the smash hit Walking Dead game. They did what all. Gosh, tons of stuff.
Sam and Max.
But they're,
Back to the Future. Sam and Max. Yeah, a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, that was the one. I couldn't think of Back to the Future. My brain locked up. I'm thinking the DeLorean and, you know. But anyway, yeah. So they were doing that. And then there was, of course, the Star Wars games. You know, all things Star Wars. But I did notice that what they would do is they would make the occasional supremely great Star Wars game. But then they'd follow that with a bunch of mediocre Yoda Star Wars games. And then,
I owned that. I did.
There's no accounting for taste.
I actually liked the idea of a coffee break game. You know, I thought that was, it was perfect. I was working as a temp at the time that came out, so it was perfect for me.
Maybe if they made it like a roguelike, you know?
Yeah, why didn't they do that? You know, it's weird, though. I feel kind of like I missed out because I was getting out of adventure games when LucasArts was getting into adventure games. Like, I think the last one I played by them was maybe The Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Maybe? Wow. Since you say they should have made a roguelike, maybe it does come full circle. Like, Sword of the Stars, The Pit is actually Yoda Story. Roguelike.
That's actually
in 2013.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's
cheap. It's really no frills, and I hate the art direction. It's that cheesy. We'll call it old school, but it's just ugly and cheap. But the underlying mechanics are pretty good, but it's not LucasArts, so
never mind.
Yeah. I digress.
I swear, there was a time though, even though they put out some crap, where you saw the LucasArts logo, you knew you were in for a good time. You know, for a while there, for at least a good 7 years, 8 years, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, was it a situation where they had people like Tim Schafer on the inside, and he was like a studio within a studio? You know, it was just like Tim Schafer's making this adventure game, and he operates in this bubble. You know, where they just crank out, you know, like Sam and Max and and Indiana Jones games and you know, Maniac Mansion. So there, I'm just wondering, like, the internal structure of the company, because that stuff carried the place for quite some time.
Yeah, I can see that, and especially since you also got to consider the stuff like the desktop adventures. That was just when 95 was coming out, and that was when all the game companies were like, shit, we got to get something out for this new platform. So I think it was
It's
not a loss leader, because I think they expected to both get their feet in it and make money off this new operating system. You know, that you saw a lot of draws from good companies like Sierra putting out they had like a screensaver and stuff like that. Big companies would just put out this garbage.
Right, they did. Yeah.
They'd put out this quick stuff for 95 and then port the other stuff as fast as they could.
I totally forgot about all that.
So, and if you remember, like, whenever Doom was the big thing, right? I think Doom actually sold more PCs than any other title back then. But then they were quick to get on that boat with Dark Forces, right? Which Dark Forces is a kick-ass game. Like, I could play that today.
Yeah, that's great. It runs fantastic.
You know, it's
about a year ago.
It hasn't really
The one thing that you will hate about Dark Forces, though, is it stuck to the live system. So you would get into a really nasty area, just a death trap, and you'd burn through all your lives, and that was it.
Oh, yeah.
So it had a weird life system that it kind of a forerunner of the whole start at the level checkpoint. So, great game, awful save system.
I've played all the I played all the first person shooters, Jedi Knight and all them, and the one I always go back to is Jedi Knight.
Yeah.
That one is just brilliant in almost every way.
Sniper level.
No, the spinning ship level always kills me.
That one. The crash. Yeah.
Oh, that was awesome. That nobody'd ever done anything like that.
Not even really since has anyone ever done anything like that. Not that I've seen. You
know, yeah, true.
Anyway.
That was like Inception before Inception.
Yeah, and also there was this one level where you had to walk along this like girder and jump onto another moving girder, and you look down, it was just endless black. And I swear no other game has tweaked my fear of heights as much as that did.
Well, that's a thing that those games, as well as the X-Wing games and that, and I'll kind of fault them, especially in the X-Wing games, because I was talking to Denny Atkin the other day, and unfortunately he couldn't be with us tonight because he had a prior commitment. But he said we probably wouldn't want him on anyway, because all he'd do is rag on the X-Wing games about how they were puzzle games.
Oh, no, he didn't.
And it's like...
Oh, no, he did not.
Yeah.
Yes, Denny is half right, though. I mean,
he's half right.
Because that game was half situational awareness and trying to figure out what was going on. You just couldn't do the old school go in and blast if you lost track of what was going on and how to figure it out. Yeah. And it was a puzzle. On some of those missions, you had to take a certain strategy or you were done.
Yeah. And it was like, how many times do I have to restart this mission before I figure out, oh, this is my priority target?
Yeah, it's like Dark Souls in space.
Now I'm finding it's similar. I'm going through TIE Fighter again, and I'm finding it's kind of similar, but nowhere near as annoying. Like, you don't notice it as much.
Yeah.
X-Wing could be hateful.
That's because you're playing TIE Fighter.
Yeah, X-Wing could be hateful.
X-Wing was brutal, and X-Wing Alliance was like, let's do this in the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
which was everybody wanted to fly the Millennium Falcon, right? It's like, oh my gosh, if we just had this. And then when we got it, we were like, oh, yeah, this is boring. Can I get my X-Wing back?
They first stuffed you in a wannabe Millennium Falcon, the YT-1900.
Which was so boring.
Yeah, it was. And then when you got the Falcon, it was they tossed it in at the end for the Death Star runs, and it was like the end game, and it was the worst part, I think, of the whole game when you finally got the Falcon. So you know, you may be right, Brian. That's a terrible, terrible game.
I never even finished it.
But it was
the first
so well.
Like X-Wing-ish game I never finished. I finished all the others, never finished that one. I couldn't be bothered.
I think I cheated through the Death Star stuff because it was just like you had to run this gauntlet through the Death Star that was – you remember the trench runs in X-Wing where you had to dodge dodge various garbage run. I might be thinking of the arcade game. But it was like that the entire time under fire. So
The final levels of X-Wing, I believe, with the Death Star, there was at least one trench run. I think there were a couple missions leading up to it.
Oh yeah, you did have the run.
Yeah, and it was all
86 choked on it.
Oh God, yeah, I remember that. And then I remember playing on a 486, and it was smooth as silk.
Yeah.
I just remember whenever I got the CD collector's edition one, and I could actually play the game in 640 by 480.
The high res.
Oh my God, it's so beautiful.
They tossed it into the TIE Fighter engine.
I'm honestly not looking forward to replaying it after TIE Fighter because it is much more puzzly, come to think of.
Yeah, so the other games, there would be like Star Wars games, like a block of them, and then some kind of genius would come out of nowhere, like Grim Fandango. Like, wow, where did that come from? Right? You know. But do you remember Afterlife?
Oh, God, I love
that game. Yeah, I never played that because I read the reviews and it just was kind of middling on it, and I wasn't in the frame of mind at the time.
It was like SimCity for dead people.
Yeah, and there was heaven and hell, and like it was really fun, humorously written. Like, you know, one of the levels of heaven was like you get to be a cow, because who's more sedate and awesome and happy than a cow? Just look in their eyes, man. You know, it was something like that, and it was just hilarious. And it was actually – I still have my CD somewhere. It's actually a great game.
Yeah. Do you remember Outlaws?
I never played that one. I missed that one.
Outlaws was the Dark Forces engine applied to Cowboys.
I heard it was a great game. I don't know why I missed it.
I think I ever just got the demo for that one.
I remember playing it, but I don't remember playing a lot of it, so I might have just demoed it.
I don't even think I demoed it because I don't remember playing it at all.
Honestly. I think that...
Yeah, you should look that up. I've got a YouTube link in that long list of YouTubes that I'm going to give you for the show notes. It's in there. I was looking at it, and I was just like, this looks great. So that engine was beyond its time, or ahead of its time, definitely. It was that bridge, because we'd had Doom and we had Duke Nukem 3D, and then there was Dark Forces, and Dark Forces was such an iterative leap over that stuff. You know, it was great. And then of course, right after that, then we were into 3D.
Into Quake,
I think it was like the last hurrah.
I think Quake probably stepped on it.
Now, I'm looking through their list of games on Mobi Games, and there are some here I've never heard of, even Star Wars, like Star Wars Demolition. Never heard of
it. Yeah, that was like a PlayStation title.
Yeah, it's totally a PlayStation title.
How about Rebel Assault?
Yes. Oh, I honestly forgot about that one.
That was probably one of their biggest sellers.
Which is sad, because it wasn't good.
Yeah.
Well, was Rebel Assault, was that the one that it was like a bundle in with every frickin' video card back then?
No.
And it was like a Laserdisc game kind of thing?
No, yeah, exactly. It was a bundle in with CD-ROMs, because it was like on that first wave of CD-ROM games. So you had the whole background, the pre-rendered backgrounds with whatever they wanted to toss up in front. So, yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember looking at that, and I was like, this is like the old arcade games, like Mach 3 and stuff, where you would be flying down a canyon that was filmed, and then you've got like a sprite of a, of a ship.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But God, they made enough of them. What did they make, like three of them over the span? Yeah.
Now,
so they sold a shitload of them.
Yeah, they made three of them. Three of them, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So then there was... Star Wars games, right? And then the Indiana Jones and the Infernal Machine. I remember Tom Chick wrote a review that was kind of displeased with that one back when it came out. I never touched
Tom's a hater. We can acknowledge that.
He is. He's the hater's hater. So
he's an artisanal hater. That's
the king of the haters.
Yeah, pretty much. But there's so many games I've never even like kind of heard of. Like Star Wars Bounty Hunter.
Nope.
What the hell is
that? Yeah, that was a GameCube only thing.
Really? I remember Shadows of the Empire.
You played Jango Fett.
I remember Shadows of the Empire because that was based on a book.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a launch title? I mean, that was a big deal. That I never played it, but Shadows of the Empire sounds like a big deal.
I think
game.
It was
Shadows of the Empire was an N64 title.
I think it might have been a launch title, yeah.
That was that one where you had it was like a Millennium Falcon-ish looking ship. It's called the Outrider or something.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a neat looking ship. But then they had some other games that were in there where I don't remember if they came before or after, but I remember flying on an N64. As a girlfriend of mine at the time, her kid.
You were flying a girlfriend at the time?
Oh
no,
family podcast. No. Family
but podcast. I remember flying like snow speeders and stuff, and doing the Hoth bat. But I don't know if that was like Rogue Squadron that was on the N64, yeah, or if it was because he was into all that stuff, right? So yeah, the N64 was just a crazy platform. I don't even understand how that came to be.
Turok. But Turok and Fatal Instinct were the two games I remember from that. You know, so
yeah,
it was
on the PlayStation. It was Star Wars Mortal Kombat.
Oh, yes. That Jedi, the
Masters of Terrence Kasi. I remember seeing that in Babbage's, and I was like, that is ridiculous.
I had some friends back in college who had it at the time, and I was like, oh, Star Wars fighting game. It was terrible. I couldn't play it. I mean, I can't play fighting games to save my life. I just hit buttons. But I usually have fun when I'm hitting the buttons, at least. With that, I didn't have fun hitting the buttons. It was just bad.
So up to this point, with the exception of talking about Bounty Hunter for a second, we've basically been talking about games that were based on the original trilogy, which, if you look at their review scores, did quite well.
Well, that's because the original trilogy was, you know.
And then a very strange thing happened in about 1998.
Oh, God. Some fan fiction, wasn't it? It was fan fiction.
Yes.
Somebody wrote some fan fiction.
Well, the first one was Episode 1, Phantom Menace, which bombed. Right?
You know what was great? Then, Racer.
Pod Racer.
Yes, I was going to say, that's the next game was Episode 1, Racer, and then behind that was Racer's Revenge. And those are the only two games that got higher than an 8.
There was a sequel to the Racer game?
Yeah, it was Racer's Revenge on PS2. I've got it. It's awesome. If you like Racer, you'll love that.
I have to find it now. Oh, my God.
Yep.
You know, we might have actually missed a couple of original games before going on to the prequels. You got take a look at Rebellion.
Oh, I loved Rebellion. It really wanted you to love it so bad. It was trying.
It was like
so
Master
hard
of Orion with the Star Wars heroes running around.
Yep.
Which was kind
of
neat.
It wasn't even Master of Orion. It wasn't even like a 4X. It was more like a character-moving game. Like, you'd move these characters here, and then you'd move this fleet there and to back up that character. But it was so good. The interface was terrible, and it was locked at 640 by 480, and it was confusing as hell, but it was great.
So do you remember LucasArts Habitat?
What?
Yeah. The online.
Yeah. It's like almost nobody has heard of that thing. There was another service that was out like that too. It was something island for what the heck was that? Quick Batman to the internet.
But Habitat was like LucasArts, almost like a Second Life.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, but it was back on 300. It was 300 baud dial up, right?
Oh,
like
God.
It was like a Genie service thing.
Yeah, it was more like Sierra's Imagination.
Oh. Oh, I was on Sierra's Imagination, at least. That was a great...
You know, were you...
Yeah, it was 1985, amazingly.
Oh,
they had an avatar-based virtual world in 1985.
Oh, my God.
How bonkers is that?
That's pretty goddamn bonkers.
Yeah, and it was probably probably like Second Life. It was used for sex.
That's what it boils down to, right?
Textual sex? I mean...
No, avatar-based, you know? You move up your avatar next to, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Back when you needed an imagination, I guess. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, there was another one that was very similar back then that Genie had, and it was that. And I was trying to recall the name, but I give up. But I saw it whenever I was looking up a video for Habitat. It was like Habitat and this other game. And it was like some kind of island, something or other. But anyway... okay, so then there was Loom, which was a pretty cool adventure game. That was like a music-based thing. I never actually played it, but I remember it was like some kind of flute-playing thing or something.
That's when they roped Spielberg's name into everything with LucasArts. They were attached at the hip for a while, like Amazing Stories. And yeah, there was a time during the 80s and late 80s when it's like Steven Spielberg presents Loom. I didn't play it either. And The Dig. No, I might be thinking of The Dig.
The Dig was awesome, by the way. It was good sci-fi.
I'm thinking The Dig.
Yeah. Okay. But so what about
didn't Spielberg put his name on just about everything back then, like Animaniacs, Tiny Toons, Freakazoid?
And those were good. Yes.
Well, those were good. Yes. Those are very good.
So Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
What?
Isn't that an indie title? I thought that was an indie title.
No, that was internal development at LucasArts for the consoles back then. It was Genesis and SNES. So it was kind of interesting. And then there was I would call it a spiritual sequel to it, was Ghoul Patrol, which came out a few years later.
Never heard of it.
I had not either, but I was looking at a video on YouTube, and I was like, okay, you play as, you know, you pick either the boy or the girl, and you run around, and you have, like, a ghost zapper gun, you know, which is basically, I don't know, it's a squirt gun with holy water. Who knows what it is? But anyway, you're like, running around as a kid in sneakers, ghost busting. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of an evolution of Zombies Ate My Neighbors, because you're rescuing people and, you know, from the ghouls. So, yeah, kind of interesting. It's like, whenever they would do things, like, they would do Star Wars things, but they were kind of stuck it with the canon that they had, right? And at that point, all of the World War II stuff was out of vogue, I guess. So whenever they would have a breakout game, it would be something like from the Scum Engine, or like, remember Full Throttle?
I hated that game.
Yeah. You know, I was looking at a video of it, and I was like, my God, the guy that was the main character in leather looks kind of like Tim Schafer. So. Yeah. So it's like, yeah,
It does. I think I didn't like it as much because that was like my first jump into I'd never been a big adventure guy. So I had that whole, I played it through, I hated the puzzles, beat the puzzles, and then it was over. And I'm like, that's it. When you're used to combat sim games, you know, games that just pretty much keep going, that whole little wrapped up package thing, it just turned me off like forever on adventure games.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, that was always the thing of like, how do I get this fence open? I don't know. Well, there's a lead pipe laying here.
Yeah. Cat mustache. Yeah. Cat hair mustache.
Wait, was that a thing in the actual game?
Not in Full Throttle, but in one of Jane Jensen's Gabriel Knight games. You had to make a cat hair mustache.
No, you did not.
I am not lying to you.
What?
Oh, that's amazing.
And that's what drove me nuts about the whole, even Sierra games, it was just all of those were, it was just so contrived. I mean, back at the time, looking at the graphics, that's what drove those things, I think, a lot. So.
I think it was basically you had to buy the clue books. Remember the Invisigo?
Yes.
And you had a highlighter, and you'd have to highlight things, and then the clue would appear.
I love those.
900 number.
Oh, yes, call the 900 number. You know,
yeah, they had numbers.
What would be fun, it would be to interview somebody that actually worked at, like, the Nintendo Power 900 number, you know, for the game, where people would call in, and I bet they got a lot of calls about Zelda, because the only way to play Zelda, you know, you'd have to, like, lay bombs on the whole map, like, every square, to see, like, where did the trapdoor appear, right, unless you had some kind of hint guide or something. Yeah, the game was nuts. It was merciless. So I wonder how many phone calls they got on that crap.
And probably the gamer rage that they had to deal with, too.
Oh, yes.
Well, now, go ahead.
It's just like I look at videos of people, you know, when they're playing these old games. It's like I'll look up a long play thing on there, and it's just like they're playing this Nintendo game, and it's like a frustration machine, right? It's like watching angry nerds thing, you know, stuff. Yeah, it's like that guy tells the truth too, man. It's some of those games were just absurd.
Well, there's another game that people actually keep telling me I need to play since I just got my first PS2 ever, and that's was it Gladius?
Oh yeah,
that's a bullet hell shooter, isn't it?
No,
it's some kind of combat.
It's a gladiatorial combat turn-based RPG thing, which apparently was amazing.
Yep, sure was.
Oh, so you played it, Jim?
I played a little bit of it. I never owned it, but I like borrowed it from somebody and played it kind of thing. So okay. I don't have like super deep memories of it, but I do remember playing it and kind of digging it. So yeah.
It
what was that chariot racing game? That LucasArts didn't make it, but it was also on the Xbox. Somebody made a chariot racing simulation, and I could continuously get the two confused.
I don't know. Ben-Hur the game.
Kind of
circus, the old Avalon Hill Circus Maximus. Yes, I am that old. So.
Yeah, I'll have to like YouTube it after the show and figure out what it is, because it's going to make me crazy. Because I was looking for footage of the other, and then it was like, wait, I thought this was a chariot thing. Yeah, then down the rabbit hole I went. Anyways,
so is it kind of interesting that the start of LucasArts demise started basically with Episode One?
I don't think that's any mystery.
No, yeah, I think at that point, you can call the end times to me to LucasArts, even though I didn't play it and I don't want to play it, is Grim Fandango. I think that was not that the game itself was bad, but that was kind of like the last spurt of we're not Star Wars. Mm-hmm. That and Secret Weapons over Normandy, which was kind of totally game's last hurrah. And then after that, it was like, hey, how can we milk the prequel? They didn't do anything after that, I don't think.
Yeah, the whole franchise, Star Wars franchise, just went to shit. And yeah, Grim Fandango was it. I got the list numerically in front of me. So there was Outlaws, Yoda Stories, yeah. Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, Masters of Terras Kasi, Grim Fandango, right? Mm-hmm. Highlight that one, because mm-hmm. that was it. And then it was Jedi Knight, Rebellion, Rogue Squadron, X-Wing versus TIE, which were okay. And then you hit the shit pit. Episode right. 1, Phantom Menace, Racer, Indiana Jones and the Infernal Machine, which was a buggy as hell Indiana Jones game, Force Commander, Droids.
Pit Droids.
Pit Droids? What? Wait.
We'll green light that. That sounds good.
Hey, what the hell
is that? Delete that up.
Pit Droids? Wait a second. Droids. That can't be a thing.
It is. It is.
Oh.
It's ridiculous.
Oh.
Sunday. Yes. Sunday.
What?
Okay, so then there was Episode 1 Jedi Power Battles, Star Wars Demolition, Star Wars Starfighter. Right? Have you played that one, by the way?
No.
That one I haven't.
Okay. Super Bombad Racing.
Oh, God. What?
Why not?
No. Wait, what?
Star Wars Obi-Wan, Jedi Starfighter. Now, Brian and I were having a discussion a couple weeks ago about how batshit crazy Jedi Starfighter was. Because you basically play Obi-Wan in his little Jedi Arrowhead Starfighter.
Yeah.
But you do things like shoot force lightning at other ships and stuff. So your guns are not enough. You have magic powers.
I kind of want to get it just for that reason.
Don't do it.
Yeah. It's okay, and then there was Racer's Revenge, which is actually a shining light of a good title. It was so bad for so long, and then Racer's Revenge came out, and it was like, oh my gosh, they actually still can make a decent game. And then there was Jedi Knight 2, which was pretty great. Mm-hmm. Clone Wars, Bounty Hunter, and then Gladius came. And Gladius, like, broke the Star Wars rut. You know, it was like, dang, they put this cool game out. But I think people were so over LucasArts at that point, it was just like, they're just shoveling shit, and nobody even wanted to see it, because it had that name on it. So I think it underwhelmed, because nobody looked at it. Nobody gave it a chance.
Yeah, I actually worked at an electronics boutique when that game came out, and nobody knew what it was except for like one guy.
Do you remember RTX Red Rock?
The hell is that?
I don't know. It's something else that they made that nobody heard of.
Wow. Oh, I'm looking at this list. Yeah, I remember Armed and Dangerous too. Apparently, that was good.
It was interesting. It was what it reminded me of actually was. Do you remember Citizen Kabuto? Giants?
Yeah, great game.
Yeah, Giants.
From something Moon Studios.
Shiny. They were Shiny then. And Planet
Shiny,
Moon.
Yeah.
And Planet Moon.
Planet Moon, okay. Right. I thought it was actually a Planet Moon game when I played it, because it was that kind of humor, right? It's this guy, and he runs around, and he's got his robot sidekick that looks like a Roman gladiator mixed with C-3PO kind of thing. Oh. And he had a gun that would actually invert gravity. So he would shoot the gun and grab the ground, and the screen would flip upside down, and he'd be like holding onto the ground with his legs kicking in the air, and everybody would fall into the sky, and then the whole planet would flip back over, and everybody would crash into the ground and die. It was basically a smart bomb.
Wasn't there a shark gun in that game?
Yes, there was.
Yes, there was.
You'd fire the gun, and a shark would come up out of the ground and eat him.
Sounds like a designer revolt.
Please
don't make us make another Star Wars game or we'll leave, kind of. Because it is. Yep. I mean, you read that list and it was just like garbage, 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 garbage. Pod Racing, which was done better in Coder, garbage, 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 and then this non-Star Wars.
Yeah. And then, okay, so then they had, after RTX Red Rock, there was Star Wars Galactic Battlegrounds.
That was the mod.
Was that the RTS?
Yeah, that was the Age of Kings mod. That's all it was. It was literally just a mod that they sold a full game.
Mm, gnarly. And then Star Wars Galaxies, love it or hate it.
Never played it. So, didn't have enough spaceships.
I have a big love-hate relationship with that game that went on.
I was playing Jumpgate at the time because it had spaceships. Like, you could actually fly.
Yeah. Oh, they eventually got spaceships in the galaxies.
Yeah, but it looked like an afterthought. It looked like a horrible, horrible afterthought.
It very much was.
Yeah.
Well, and what was nasty about it is like, I remember being at Star Wars Celebration 2, right? And they had Hayden
Christensen.
Blackman.
Christensen.
Was it Hayden Christensen? And then there was some guy that had Black something in his name. I can't remember. But anyway, those guys were there from LucasArts, and they showed the game off, you know, before anybody had
Hayden Christensen is the guy who played Anakin in the prequels.
Okay. But anyway, it was some guys from the Galaxy's dev team that were there, and they were showing the game off. And it was like my buddy Eddie, like, knew them kind of thing, so he was glued over there, like, talking to them. And, so that was kind of interesting. I ran into Adam Sessler there. That was the first time I ever met him. And good times. But anyway, they're showing off Galaxies, and they were showing the starship combat stuff right then, you know, of like this guy, and you can get, and you know, honestly, it kind of looked like Chris Roberts' stuff of like, oh yeah, well, you can be in the Star Destroyer, and then we'll run down and get in our TIE fighter, right? And then we'll fly around and like shoot at the shield generators and that. And none of that shit's there.
Lies. Yeah. God.
But, yeah, so they had that vision, you know, back then. Let's see. So Knights of the Old Republic came right after that.
Yep. Amazing game. Yep. I wanted a few games that I actually finished. I don't finish a lot of games, and I finished that one.
Speaking of games finished, Jedi Academy. My wife had to have that because she'd played the first the Jedi Knight 1 and 2, like a little bit of it. But then we had some friends that liked to lightsaber duel online, right?
Jedi Academy was great for that.
Yes, sir. And then she got into the single-player game and just beat it.
Yeah, the single-player game was also great. I loved how you can dual-wield, or either that or you get the spear.
Yeah, another example of Raven doing its thing. You know, there was nothing spectacular, I think, about Academy, but it was just a solid shooter.
It was very solid. They released the source code, which I thought was very nice. So hopefully we'll see... Like with Free Space 2, hopefully we'll see upgraded graphics and such.
So then there was Star Wars Battlefront, which I'm trying to remember. Was that the
that was Pandemic? That was Pandemic's take on
right?
Exactly.
Wasn't it good? I heard it was good.
It was good. Both of them were okay. It was kind of janky. Both of them were.
Right.
But it was
just like any other.
There was a inconsequential single player mode, but it was a multiplayer game basically.
Right.
And I feel terrible for anybody that bought that thing thinking that it was single player.
I think I did, because I think I bought it on a Steam sale for like $1 and then played it with bots. I'm like,
Yeah. I will say that the mod community has taken other games and made better Star Wars games than the official Star Wars multiplayer games. Just over and over again, they have done that. Then they had this little game come out for the PlayStation. It was called Wrath Unleashed, and it was actually
flying game or something.
No, it was Monster Chess. It was a very strange little game. Yeah, you had a hex map, and you would summon monsters.
It was Archon. It
reminded me of Archon. Yeah,
really.
And you get your monster and their monster in the hex, then you'd grab the gamepad and fight.
I never knew that.
Yeah, that was. That was like the last Toys for Bob Crystal Dynamic thing. So you had that you had Paul Ritchie from Toys for Bob kind of reprising what he did in Archon and whatnot. And that was I still have that as that's like one of the few PS1 games I'd like searched out and destroyed trying to find. Because it was 3D Archon.
So it's good.
It's all right. I mean, it's you've kind of got that whole Archon thing is where you move your pieces on a map, and then you kind of go into a brawling fight mode with your two monsters that meet up together. And it was all right. I mean, the graphics are hideous PS1 graphics, but it is worth tracking down.
Because it's a penny on Amazon right now.
Really?
Well, with $6 shipping.
Yeah, but $50 shipping.
But no, it's a dollar with it, so you can get it with shipping for $5.
Not that I would ever say anything, but you'd probably be getting an emulator and finding another source for that.
Yeah, definitely. So then Armed and Dangerous, which we already talked about, and then the first half of KOTOR 2 came out.
otherwise known as KOTOR 2, yeah.
Yeah, KOTOR 2A. KOTOR 2 beta was just released.
Yep.
Not so long ago. They finally finished that damn game. What did it take? 10 years?
Whack
that the God. People... Yeah, but that's awesome, though, that they actually found all that disabled stuff that was still in the code. And, you know, the resources were still there.
I heard
they shipped it, all that stuff.
I heard it turned out actually pretty well once it was all said and done.
Yeah, once it was finished. Sure.
Yeah.
And then another weird, like, breakout game where they were just like, screw Star Wars. We're, you know, Star Wars is failing, so let's make Mercenaries, Playground of Destruction.
I think that was I think that, you know, since they roped in Pandemic for, was it Battlefront? The multiplayer one?
Yeah.
They brought Pandemic back in, and Mercenaries is, I think, on our PS2. What games does Brian need to buy for his PS2? Mercenaries gets mentioned many, many times.
You want to hear something sad about that? I bought a copy of Mercenaries. I got it on eBay for like $3.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. I was
How did Mercenaries 1 compare to Mercenaries 2?
Mercenaries 1 was a lot tighter. Mercenaries 2 was more of the same, I guess. Obviously, it's made for another generation of consoles. Don't buy it for the PS2. Do not do it. But all I can say about Mercs 2 is that it hung together a lot more loosely than the first game. I prefer the first one, even though it's on the PS2 hardware.
See, I got Mercenaries 2 on the PC, and it was just buggy and hellish.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, you know, did they ever fix it?
Not for the PC.
It's like
there were issues with it, and Pandemic did some hand waving them over it by getting rid of the buggy features. You're definitely going to want to go to a console. I have it for PS3, and it's okay. I mean, there are no other games where you can call in, you know, laser bomb strikes and A-10 strikes, napalm strikes right on front of guys in front of you. The things that it does really well, but it just doesn't hang together all that great.
I'll have to get another copy then at some point, because I was really excited to play it, and then I just got stuck on the rating screen. It didn't go any further.
So a game that I really, really liked, and unfortunately won't play on modern versions of Windows, and it maybe like good old games will get a hold of it and fix it, is Star Wars Republic Commando. Mm-hmm. I liked that game quite a bit.
Did I play that in X? I think I played that in XP, so I can't say 7. But you are right. That is that is a unsung gem.
Huh.
Yeah, because it's basically like a... What would it be like? Kind of like a Rainbow Six game.
It is.
Except in the Star Wars universe.
It's on Steam.
Yeah, but Steam doesn't make any guarantees that game's actually going to work on your system.
Oh.
See, I've run into that with a couple of things. So, I don't know. What do they want, like $9 for it?
I don't know. I have it. I just never played it.
Where, are you running Windows 7 64?
Yeah.
Fire it up. Not right now.
Yeah, I'll install it after this thing.
I'll buy it.
I've apparently played 43 minutes of it.
It is a pleasant surprise, though. That is kind of Luke. I think we can all agree that by this time, after Coder, no serious gamer was really paying attention to LucasArts anymore. And then Republic Commando, I think I picked up at a half price books when I had XP, and it was like, wow. This is okay. This is, a shooter. You got to direct your team, your squads around, and your squad would like heal you and back you up, and it was a good game.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things that was interesting was, like, you could get shot down, but as long as one of the guys in your squad was okay, if the bots could take care of it, they would come revive you.
I played that sometime last year because other people were talking about it. I played, like, two missions. And it was on Win 7, yeah. 64, and it ran fine, and that was fun. The AI was good. Like, you knew what it was.
Yeah, I remember breaking the Wookiees out of prison, and the Wookiees just went, like, Wookie shit. And so it started tearing stuff up, and it was just, it was awesome. I liked that game quite a bit. Yeah, they should make more games like that. So then there was, Star Wars Empire at War, which was that RTS thing, right? They had like a space component and a land.
I've not played it.
I have it on my laptop. It is a game I have a love-hate with it. I desperately want to be able to get into it because it's RTS. You have your TIE fighters and cruisers, and then you can land battle. But it is a not pandemic, a Terraglyph. They make fiddly RTSs with a lot of micro and no pause. And after a Company of Heroes being able to pause and issue orders and whatnot, I can't.
I still have yet to play it. I'm sorry, I haven't played it yet.
I think that game is basically like there's a campaign which is pretty much the training mode for actually doing skirmishes against other humans. Yeah. But I think it from the get go they were just like, well, you have to put a single player thing in here because that's what most people are gonna buy it for. But we're really doing it for the minority that are gonna play multiplayer. Because StarCraft was a big thing. And they were trying to have, like, let's make Star Wars StarCraft was kind of the vibe that I got.
Kinda. Maybe not as buildy. Like I said, I really want to like it because it is literally the only game in town. You had Galactic Battlegrounds, which is just a Age of Kingdoms mod. And then you've got this Fallen 3. And when it works, when you've got like a big real-time space battle going, you've got a cinematic camera, TIE fighters and X-Wings and Z-95s and Destiny and all, just going nuts. But then you have you've got a lot of micro there, but then you've also got this non-pausable strategic layer. Let me reemphasize that. Non-pausable strategic layer where you're doing like 4X kind of stuff. You're moving
and
fleets around.
It's non-pausable.
No, so you've got the strategic layer going, you know, ticking away.
Kill me.
And that's I think that's pretty much what kills it for me every time.
Oh, I would want to shoot myself. You got to be able to. I mean, even in real time games with like that, let you pause.
Yeah, and there's no pause.
What?
So love hate.
That's so stupid. That's so stupid.
So then. Another standout weird title that came out of nowhere was Thrillville.
What is that?
Off the rails.
What is that?
Roller Coaster Tycoon on PS2.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's what that is. Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yeah.
More toward
and
theme
there's
park.
There's a 360 version of it as well. Yeah. And it's totally like run around in your theme park that you've made. Kind of thing.
Another one of those Star Wars revolts.
But there's two of them. There's one for Thrillville Off the Rails, and then there's just Thrillville.
You know a game that we totally missed from LucasArts? What's going that? Back to Thrills? Stunts. Stun Island.
That's them?
Stun Island was...
Yeah, but it wasn't internally developed.
Yeah,
I pruned out all the... everything that was not internally developed, I pruned out of our list. So... Because it's like they farmed out a few things.
Right.
But they actually had sort of a coup in the management of the company. I was reading an article that was basically a synopsis of why did Disney choose. It was like in Forbes or something. But it was like a why did Disney choose to kill LucasArts, you know, with this legacy that they had. And they said it was like in the early 2000s they brought a new manager in. And he stuck around for a couple of years, but his big thing was to restructure the company, kill off all this outsourcing, bring all the dev teams in, and if there was studios out there that they used a lot that they liked, let's just buy them, you know, and bring them in under the roof. And unfortunately, that kind of flamed out because they just didn't give them any topics to work with, you know, because that was in that deluge of shitty Episode 1 era stuff. So it was just like, let's take the most talented people in the room and give them like a dog turd and see if they can polish it. Unfortunately. So that happened. And then magic happened because Lego Star Wars.
The Lego Star Wars is actually pretty cool.
Yes, I will agree.
Yeah, so they got three Lego Star Warses, two Lego Indiana Jones, and then The Force Unleashed.
Yeah.
And then it died.
I heard that wasn't very good.
It was terrible. You know, it was really bad.
But apparently it sold well enough to get a sequel.
I think the rage on the internet reached its peak when people realized that at some point in there you have to force pull a Star Destroyer from space and crash it into the planet at your feet.
Sounds legit.
And people were just like, yeah. And it was like the guy had a wildly varying power level. You know, it's like 10 guys could kill you, but you could yank a Star Destroyer out of the sky and crash it at your
feet.
Don't
you kill Darth Vader in that one or something? Or?
No. You're actually recruited by Darth Vader. The very beginning of the game is Darth Vader lands personally to come and kill your father because he was a Jedi or something, and
it's like
executes him in front of you. Yeah, and it's like you're cowering in the corner, you know, the son of the guy that was just killed, and then Vader's like, join me, and, you know, then you're bad. So there you go. But the game, I do own it on the 360, the first one, not the second one. But then it became like a platformer thing, and that just really turned me off. The parts where you're running around killing stormtroopers, and it's like Vader's like, we're going to send you in here, and you're going to sabotage this Imperial thing because I don't understand that. You know, it's like the thing in Star Wars, in the first movie, where they're all sitting around the table, and all the Moffs are treating Vader like he's some kind of punk, right? It's like, oh yeah, you're just some crazy wizard. And then they retcon it so that, no, Vader is actually the second in command of the whole empire, right?
He wasn't, because in the first movie, he was a punk, if you think about it.
Yeah, they were just like, you're like some crazy wizard, get out of here, and he chokes the guy.
He was, if you look at that first, Vader was just a hireling, not a hireling, but just a, you know, whatever, you're not a Moff.
Yeah, and then suddenly he's number two in the universe, and then they retcon that crap back in episode one, you know, right up to the I can't start.
Yeah, fan fiction is pretty bad. I try to avoid it.
Oh,
yeah,
I got turned off on it. I got turned off on fan fiction very early. I was a huge Trek nerd in my early days, and so
you know what I've found about Star Trek is when Star Trek is currently on TV. Whatever it is, I hate it. Cannot stand it. It's the dumbest shit ever. And then you give it about 15 years, and I watch reruns of it on Netflix, and I'm like, oh my God, this was awesome. Why didn't I like this?
Oh, it's
then?
The Borg again.
Like, I'm time travel. What? Yeah. That. God. Well, I started the reason that I bring that up. I started watching Scott Bakula on Enterprise.
Oh. And why did you do that?
You know,
there are good infomercials to watch.
You know, but
somewhere,
you know, I was
somewhere
watching
there's
it.
An episode of Here Comes Honey Boo Boo that you need to see.
but the thing is, like, it's been like 13 years, right? So I'm watching this thing, and then it's like I start noticing T'Pol, you know, and I'm like, okay, this show's getting better. And then they had that scene in the second episode where they had to, like, decontaminate after they'd been on some planet. And, of course, they don't have transporter technology yet or anything. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that about the show. It's like, we don't have shields, we don't have phasers, we don't have transporters. We're doing it kind of old school. I'm a bit offended. Well, the theme song really makes my hair stand up. And then the, like, who put a country western song in space? And then
that was a big deal for me.
But it's kind of like it's a big break from Star Wars. Like, I wouldn't believe it's really a Star Wars show or Star Trek.
Whoa, see, slow down there.
Yeah. So, it's a big deviation from that. But if you look at the stuff that had gone on, like Voyager, like how many years of Voyager was in front of this. So I'm willing to forgive a lot, right? But I'm watching this thing, and they had that one show where they have to decontaminate. And T'Pol basically strips down to her underwear, and the guy's like rubbing some kind of decontamination gel on her, and I just realized like how absolutely mind-blowingly hot this actress is, and it's like, okay, I'm in. I'm in. How many seasons?
She was pretty hot. I couldn't even keep watching even with her. No.
No, I can honestly say so, I never sat through an entire episode of one of those. I just
don't.
I just like ugh.
Don't. Well, the thing that got me like, and I started reading about it on Wikipedia. I was like, what are the episodes? What's the story arc that happens over the season, right? And then they were talking about, well, like the first season was kind of okay. In the second season, people were really starting to dig it. And then in the third season, they started the temporal war, where it's actually like people from the future are coming into the past. And then there's like some other thing of space. And these guys that have been around since the first season and you didn't know what they were, they were like the Borg, right? It's the like every third episode, it's about these guys that are a mystery. And then it turns out, well, these guys are actually the secret agents of the time traveling
Booker
whatever.
Elizabeth.
And I'm like, oh my, it's just like, oh my god, they took the entire show and they built it around some kind of time travel horse shit that people that watch Star Trek don't really dig so much anyway. Right, and it's like for some reason they got it in their minds that this is Doctor Who suddenly.
What is it with time travel? I mean, even my favorite sci-fi series, Babylon 5, you had like Sinclair coming back through time to become like a, you know, the deity of the Minbari. It's like the ultimate crutch for TV sci-fi shows.
Yes, and it is terrible. So
I like it on Doctor Who. But
the thing with Star Trek that always got me though was like in Next Generation. They're like, oh, well, we have to hide inside the sun so that we don't get killed. So Wesley invents this widget that lets their shields modulate. They can hide inside the sun.
It was a Ferengi scientist.
I know the Ferengi guy. Oh, my God.
Jesus, man.
But anyway, then the next season or the next episode, next week, it's like we're being shot. Oh, no, the shields are failing. And I'm like, wait a minute.
A half later. Come on.
Oh my gosh!
The hand wavium stuff.
I'm gonna get that T-shirt that's got the Enterprise on it, and it says Star Wars number one fan, and just see how much rage I could work up walking past people.
No, I kind of liked how in Deep Space Nine they kind of made fun of themselves when they had trials and tribulations, and they had that, and they that bureau, that temporal bureau, or whatever, that investigated that stuff, and they're like Kirk. That son of a gun, you know, like he ruins everything, you know. I think I like that was kind of a little nod to how ridiculous the whole time travel thing is.
Yes, but they keep doing it.
Well,
it's
very popular. People like those stories. Yeah. I think Doctor Who's almost 50 years old for crying out loud.
Well, that's true. But anyway, so we digress.
I love tangents.
So there was the Lego games. Which I think the Lego games, honestly, if you can take that Lego mechanic, if you can tolerate it, of like, I must break everything in the environment that makes the little coins pop out, and, you know, what? I don't know. But anyway, that whole Lego thing, even though it's kind of kiddified, it's got co-op player, you know, multiplayer in it, so you can sit next to somebody on the couch and play through the game. It's cute, it's inoffensive, and it's a family thing, mm-hmm. right? But they also put in so many references and the humor, and it's self-referential humor, and it's great.
Yeah, those are
fun. It makes it tolerable for me.
It's that whole thing where if you're going to do really good satire, you have to love what you're satirizing.
Right.
And that, I think, for the original trilogy at least, that's exactly it. I mean, we all know the foibles of the Star Wars series. But they put what's the name of that company? Telltale, I think? TT? Not Telltale. Yeah,
it's just TT.
Traveler's Tales. Traveler's
Tales. Yeah, TT. Yeah.
They just poured a bunch of love in those games. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. Those are fun. Like they made the first. They made the prequels bearable in their own little way.
Yeah.
Mm.
They were so much.
So then there's this game called Star Wars Fracture's not a Star Wars game.
What is that?
I'm sorry. That's a typo. It's this game called Fracture that they made.
Never.
That is fairly recent. It's a 360 title. What I remember it being is you had like some kind of earthquake gun.
Earthquake
gun? So,
sure.
Wow. Yeah, you'd shoot this gun and it would make earthquakes and the ground would split open and kill people.
Sure.
Yeah. Kind of strange.
Populous.
And you know, but you know what it harkens back to is Armed and Dangerous. Because they had that gun in Armed and Dangerous that would smart bomb everybody with gravity. So I think it's kind of a similar mechanic happening there. Third person shooter kind of thing.
I've never even heard.
And then we get into the True Stench. Star Wars Clone Wars lightsaber duels on the Wii.
What?
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah. What? That was the long promise. Like, when they first showed the Wii, and everybody saw that controller, and it's like, oh, you just wave this around, and lightsaber game. Right? And everybody was like, oh my god, we gotta get a lightsaber game. And it took until, like, the end of life of the Wii for them to finally ship a lightsaber game. And I don't know if it was good or not, but it was like, I was so over the Wii by that point.
I've never had a Wii, so I never got over one.
I played one at work for, like, the bowling one, and that's it. That was all.
You know, I'm pretty convinced that the bowling game is the best game on the Wii. It was like, the first game was the best game that was ever on the platform, and that's all she wrote. So, and of course, the Wii U is about to completely bury Nintendo. It's like, it's going to be the Nintendo version of THQ shipping all those drawing tablets for the 360 that nobody bought.
Yeah.
Well, what about the DS and all them? Don't they sell
mobile? I think mobile's probably going to start eating their lunch. Yeah. Back in the day, I would have loved something like the PSP Vita or the DS, but it's like I've got the Nexus tablet now and I just play games on that.
Right.
Yeah. The only thing that it lacks is actual physical controls. I wish that I had buttons and a D-pad.
Yeah.
And it's not difficult. Like, there's a rumor going around, and I hope to God that it's true, that Apple is actually going to come out with an official Bluetooth gamepad that will work with the stuff.
It's
still in the rumor stage.
There's Android gamepads, but it's like $50 for something that maybe I can play like Grand Theft Auto, and that's it. That's the only thing it supports, so forget it.
Mm. Yeah, so if it was official from Apple, then everybody would support it, like on day one.
Yep.
That's good for retro. It's good. Yeah, absolutely. But it's good for retro style games. I've got Gridley, which is basically MAME that was snuck back onto the App Store again, which is awesome. They finally figured it out and snatched it off of there, so I'm a little upset about that. But it gives me a reason that I'm glad that I have that iCade, because I can actually play arcade games on my iPad now. Yeah.
I wish they'd made an iCade for the Android. That would be pretty cool. I would like to have a little MAME box.
What's an iCade? What are you doing?
It's like a little cabinet.
It's like a miniature arcade cabinet, and you slide your tablet into it, and it's got a micro switch joystick and six buttons, and the buttons are mapped into the games, and there's a lot of the arcade compilation stuff, like Midway's Greatest Hits and stuff. Yeah, and they cost, like, if you catch them on sale, you can get them for about $50. I think they're generally like 70 to 99.
I need a towel. I'll be right back.
You can play Gorf on your iPod, or your on your iPad, or the whatever Midway collection or Atari collection that comes with it.
Oh God.
Yeah, I've got however many games they let you put in a folder. I've got three folders full of games that support the thing, so it's not scarce. But a lot of games, it's like, well, why would I code for that? Because there's no real reason to, because the majority of people aren't going to have it. So am I going to code this for the 0.1% that actually have this thing?
Chicken
I don't know.
Egg problem.
But the thing is, if people do put support for that in their game and they announce it, like right in the description of the game, it's got iCade support. I can search for that and I will buy your game. Because I've got an iCade and I need to feed that thing. So, just pro tip to the developers. Just put it in the description.
That makes me want an iPad even more now. Oh,
iPads are great. They're pretty cool. I would say, honestly, though, you probably want to go with like a Nexus 7 or that if you have a bunch of emulation stuff, because you can just see that with the iPad.
I want to play Hyperion Galactica 2 and Space Weird Ho.
You can get DOS, but I've had DOSBox on the Nexus 7. It runs okay because it's just built off of whatever SVN. But you're talking about keyboard, and the mouse emulation is okay. I was literally playing Master of Orion 2 on my Nexus, but it's a pain. So that's why I just go back and play Super Hexagon on my Nexus instead of, you've got these Amiga emulators. I had a Game Boy emulator on there so I could play Pokemon Gold, or I don't know why.
I had a game of Super Hexagon that went like 30 seconds one time. I was thrilled.
That's pretty epic.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, 30 seconds. I did it. I should get a T-shirt for that shit.
Yes, you should. But
that game is so hard.
But in terms of the
ridiculous.
The emulation on the it's cool in theory. I mean, I've had an Amiga emulator on there. I've had DOSBox, GBA, whatever. It's I think Azeron's right in that if it supported a stick, you'd be in good shape. But think about it, Brian. You could haul around a Mu 2 playing game, you know, a little tablet.
Well, what it's good for, though, is the console stuff, like Super Nintendo things.
Yeah.
And they have ported over some games, like the Final Fantasy games. Square has the balls to charge $15 for Final Fantasy, like 3, you know, but they got it out of me. So what's that say about them and me, right?
Yeah.
Some other games that are on there, you know, they'll take the things that are the old console games that still need a joypad and buttons, and they kind of work that. So wherever your thumb lands over on the left side of the screen is the center of the joypad, and then you just slide your thumb around. And it'll recenter if you pick your thumb up and drop it again.
Yep.
So, but you don't have the tactile feel of that. And whenever I've got like a 3DS in my hand, then I have no ambiguity about where the buttons are.
Right.
You know? So it just feels like something. So the tablet kind of loses a little of that. But I think my argument of that is that they just need to design tablet games for the tablet interface and get away from the whole, I need a virtual joypad.
Mm.
Or make a damn physical joypad, because how hard is it? You know?
Yeah.
The Android's got plenty.
That's kind of the I was playing Beat Trip Hazard. You probably know this game, Brian. It's basically, it's a music-based two-stick shooter. And it's got two modes, one stick and two sticks. And the two stick, it's almost impossible because you don't have that tactile feedback. You're sliding your finger on the screen, but you know it's I totally understand where you're coming from there.
That's a fantastic
game. So this brings us to the last of the LucasArts games. The last thing that LucasArts shipped was Kinect Star Wars.
Oh, what a legacy. God.
What do you actually...
Dance Star Wars.
Is that what you do in Star Wars Kinect? I mean, it is. Really?
It's a dance.
You've
dance
not
Star
seen
Wars.
It?
No.
Oh, my God. Okay, we're going to do this live on the show. I'm gonna send Brian a link on YouTube, and he's going to watch it, and then we're going to hear his reaction.
What? Okay. Oh, that sounds horrible.
So, should I do the Lando one?
Lando?
Or?
What?
Yeah, or, Lando's smooth, man. He's got the moves.
I need to drink a lot of Colt 45 before I watch this.
It does work every time. It does. I assure you.
Billy D.
Oh, yes. Here we go.
Okay.
This is awesome.
Hit me with the magic, man. I will watch.
Oh my God!
And save that in those links to YouTube, so we can just include it so other people.
Oh yes.
Put it in the Steam thing. Put it in the Steam thing. There we go. Okay, I am clicking. I'm afraid. I'm very afraid. Come on. Okay, here we go. Oh, dancing to I Am Han Solo. Yeah.
Yes. It takes 30 seconds before it hits. It's 36 seconds in.
Should I just skip 36 seconds?
Nope.
Okay.
Don't skip a moment.
On experience.
Oh God. Wait. Yeah.
Do you have the sound on? You have to hear it.
Yeah, it's my what? I don't know what's oh God, what's happening? Oh God, the guy with the ring in his head is a DJ. Oh, he's dancing with Cloud City people. It's a Cloud City game. It's a Cloud City song with lyrics. I'm Han Solo, yeah, I'm feeling good tonight. What?
Look at the names of the dance
and
moves.
It's a snap. It's a snap. The speeder. The speeder. Oh, God. He's doing a lot of the speeder. This is, Falcon in Flight. Oh, God. You know what I hate to say? This song is kind of catchy.
It's like
just a little
Gangnam
bit.
Style, you know?
Just a little catchy. The trash compactor. There's a move called the trash compactor.
Hey, why not?
Okay, I'm not watching all 4 minutes of that. I can't take anymore.
Nope. But then Lando shows up and they have a dance off.
Oh.
I'm not even lying.
Oh. And that was their last. That was their last thing.
That was the last hurrah, man.
How the mighty have fallen. They rose so high during their heyday.
And fell so far. There's one more.
What?
Let's see this other one.
Oh, no. Don't make me. Okay.
Do you have your sound on so you can actually hear this music?
Yeah, no. Because
it's cover songs. Okay.
No, I can hear it through the thing. Yeah, I can hear it.
This is the worst.
Vader and Palpatine? What? Wait.
You know, you can just see a bunch of 20-something hipsters all sitting around a design table.
There's people laughing. I hear people laughing at this.
Actively it's like trying to destroy our childhood memories.
It's like they're showing this video to an audience and they're recording the audience because the kimono wave and the punch it and the, oh God.
You need a Kinect, Ryan.
No, I don't even have an Xbox 360. This is the Raise It. Okay, these dance move names are stupid. Okay, and the trash, there's the trash compactor again. And why is there the Raise It Up? What does that even mean?
I don't know. He should do the force choke, right? Like
the
force
choke out that guy. Uh-oh, here comes the three-pointer. Uh-oh. Oh, and the force throw.
Oh, they have a chewy hug. There's the chewy hug.
They should have a chewy hug. Disturbing move.
I can't believe this is the last thing LucasArts ever did. This is embarrassing.
That is their legacy.
I'm actually tearing up right now because I want to cry. And you know what's sad? You know what's sad? There's a part of me that goes, where can I get that soundtrack?
Hey, so skip to 2 minutes and 50 seconds.
Oh, no, I just closed it, but let me reopen it and do that because I can only take so much. So skip to what? 2 minutes and...
2 minutes and 50 seconds.
2 minutes and 50... Okay, 2:44. Oh, no. Oh, no. Emperor's getting his shit on. No. No, not Palpatine. Okay. No. Really? He's dancing with his red guys. The Chewy Hug. The Bantha Rider. Oh, dear God. It looks like he's grabbing his crotch.
They have another song on there where it's Princess Leia in her Slave Leia bikini with the chicks with the tails, right? Twi'lek chicks, right? And the song is Hologram Girl, which is a cover of Holla Back Girl.
Okay, that was
tasty.
That is a
tasty
burger.
I just
had a wonderful dinner and a fantastic dessert bought for me by my girlfriend, and I just might throw it all up right now. Sorry.
It's a normal reaction being exposed to Xbox Kinect Star Wars.
Oh, I can't.
So now we have to discuss how could it possibly be that Disney decided to shut this studio down.
You know what? Now that we've gone through the history, and especially now that you've shown me that, I might be coming on the side of mercy killing because that put it out of its misery. It's obviously in pain. It's obviously suffering. It's obviously flailing around.
And if you think about it, look at all of LucasArts' titles as you go back. The outsourcers, I think, put out the best titles.
Absolutely.
You had Petroglyph doing Emperors of War. You had Pandemic doing the two Battlefronts. You had Totally Games or Lawrence Holland doing all his stuff. The internal titles were just almost always,
They seem to vary. Like some of the internal titles, like Gladius apparently was good, and there are a few others that were good, but they seem to be much less consistent when they were internally developed. Than when they were externally developed.
So I'm pretty much of the opinion with LucasArts gone. It's like we came here to bury LucasArts, not to praise it. Totally, they didn't have any juice left.
Yeah, we got to put
which is a shame.
Yeah, we got to put a funeral pyre together, I guess, and stack it on top, wrap it in cloth, and burn it.
just like Vader.
Jedi. Yeah. Yeah, just like Vader and Jedi or whatever.
You go to sleep tonight, Brian, seeing the trash compactor moves through your head. Yeah, just dancing around. Emperor's grabbing his crotch.
I am going to see that in my nightmares, and then tomorrow I'll find the soundtrack. I'm not even lying. I'm going to find the soundtrack. I don't know why.
You know what they should do is they should have took on the last day everybody at LucasArts and put them out in the parking lot and took a group photo. And then Photoshop that so they're all blue glowies, right?
Yeah, like there you
Force
go.
Ghost stand. But anyway. You know.
Should have had.
But yeah, it's never fun when a bunch of people lose their jobs, right? But I'm sure that they'll all land somewhere.
Yeah. You know? I mean, there are other studios popping up. Plus, indies are getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah. Well, I heard, too, in the layoffs that happened, that it also touched over in Industrial Light and Magic. Because Light and Magic, yeah, ILM and LucasArts apparently were doing a 50-50 split of some employees' time.
Oh.
So when Lucas Games was gone, then ILM had all these people that they didn't really have projects enough to fill their time.
Oh, no.
So then they cut a bunch of people. Yeah. So that's kind of unfortunate. But I think that they were so chained up with all the Clone Wars and Episode One legacy bullshit that, you know, and who's to say that Disney won't take some of those people and slide offers to them across the table. You know, it's like, okay, you're the cream of that crop, so come aboard.
What they need to do is they need to talk to Good Old Games, they need to talk to Steam, and they need to get their library out there. That's what they need to do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's another problem that LucasArts had, is they were very, very slow to adopt digital distribution. Very slow.
Yeah.
And they still don't have the whole catalog up. But it's like they're trickling it into Steam. And I think Good Old Games could come along and fix a bunch of the old ones. But yeah, God, definitely.
I would die if X-Wing and TIE Fighter came onto Good Old Games. I would just...
Yeah, well, it's like, who owns it now? Is it?
I think Disney. I think Disney does.
Outright.
I think Disney does.
Yeah, they have
I think they bought the whole thing, the whole kit and caboodle.
There is no reason to not take that game, because how far is an Xbox, especially the next generation Xbox, how far is that going to be away from regular PC code?
Mm.
They could put a wrapper on that thing, fix the graphics, and throw that shit up on Xbox Live.
You'd have to simplify the controls a great deal.
Mm, yeah,
not
well, it would
as
take
much
kind
as you
of
think.
A...
I mean, how much do you play with the... I have that Xbox 360 gamepad that I use for a bunch of crap, and it's like it harks back to the old CH Pro days with all those buttons on it, so you could do it.
Yeah.
You could do it.
Yep. The only thing would be just adjusting the controls for the trickiness of how glitchy it is. So, it could be doable, but they did the Star Wars Starfighter and Jedi Starfighter in that, and those games were pretty abysmal.
Mm.
So, I don't know. I wouldn't have the greatest of hope. But then again, it's going to be like a whole new team, right? So maybe we have to start over at zero.
I still want to try Jedi Starfighter. I really do. I'm looking for it.
I really think that you should. And you know what? They made it on the PS2, did they
not? Yes, I'm looking for I'm trying to find a copy that's less than a dollar. I haven't found one yet. That's the most I want to pay for this. So I just keep an eye out on eBay and Amazon every so often. Like, is there a copy that's less than a dollar? Oh, no. So yeah, I'm not going to get it for less than a buck. So,
well, the other thing you could do, what I've found is on a lot of these old games where I get the urge to go back and play them again, is I'll just watch like a YouTube long play, and I get the same satisfaction. You know, I'm just like, oh, okay, I remember this. All right, that's enough.
Really?
Bye. Yeah.
I'll try that and see if it twinges anything. I'm not sure, but we'll see. I like actually playing stuff. Even if I never finish stuff, I like actually playing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I want to at least give it a shot, because that just sounds batshit ridiculous.
Oh, it is.
And sometimes I like batshit ridiculous.
Then you like Mercenaries.
Seriously. I do need to play that one, too.
Go find it. It's everywhere, and put it on your PS2. I think it's definitely one of the best games on that platform. It was kind of toward an end of life, you know, the end of the PS2 titles.
Right.
Where everybody knew all the tricks, so they could squeeze everything out of it. And that Mercenaries is a romp.
Like what they're doing with the PS3 and Xbox now. They're just squeezing every bit of juice out of them for the PS4. So what do we think will happen now? We were just talking about that. What do we think will happen with games now? What do we think will happen with these licenses now? Will we see more Star Wars games? Especially with the new movies coming out?
You know, I don't know that we're going to hear a lot about the new games, because they probably don't want to give away a lot about the movie, right? Mm-hmm. So they're going to hold that stuff pretty close until they get around to release time of the movie.
Mm.
That's what my bet is.
My bet is I think there's a, just I don't have any really thing to back it up other than just watching. I'm wondering if Disney, you know, they're obvious. There's going to be game tie-ins. There has to be. Disney's going to come out with movie. We already know that, and there has to be tie-ins. I'm just wondering how aggressive it's going to be in terms of if it's going to be a AAA game, if it's going to be, or but I have a feeling it's going to be more toward the mobile space. I think there's going to be a AAA publisher reckoning here soon. And I'm wondering if Disney's going to be smart enough to not get caught up in that. But I think we are never, sorry Brian, and sorry me, because I love the games. We're never going to see anything like X-Wing. We're never going to see anything like TIE Fighter. Those days are gone. It's going to 13. Something like 1313 is going to be the thing that comes back.
I might have played that. It was supposed to be about Boba Fett. I probably would have played that.
Yeah. But that's
right. Like some, do you have some kind of a Dungeons and Dragons game going
what's going on?
Because saving throws.
I have these dice that I randomly roll to keep my hands busy. So.
Okay, because it was just like every time we mention Jar Jar Binks, you roll a saving throw. Or there it is.
Damn it, a one.
Son of a bitch.
Fucking critical. Critical miss every time. Hate this game.
I wonder.
Good.
No, I just wonder how Ahmed Best feels about his legacy with that, like being the most hated character in cinematic history.
Is that the guy who did the voice?
Yeah. Wow.
He got his paycheck. You know.
Yeah. He got paid.
Probably a pretty
He's
nice.
Like, hate me. I talk like Stephen Fetchit. I don't care. I got paid. It was all green screen.
All he does is voice work now, I bet. You know, yeah. All he does.
Yeah.
Can't blame him.
Well, anyway, you want to put this one in the bag?
Yeah. I think we've done a good job. Thank you, Jim, for taking the time to put that data together. And yes. I appreciate that because I didn't have the time today. But thank you for putting that together. I think we've done a good job of kind of outlining the rise and the fall. And I think you guys are right.
Resounding thud.
Resounding.
Emperor crotch grabs, man. It's the next thing.
The Emperor doing the trash compactor will forever be seared into my brain. I'll have nightmares about it tonight. No question. I'll wake up. Oh, God. Oh, okay. Oh, it's not real. Oh, thank God. But
it is real, Brian.
But Chase, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us tonight. It made for a very spirited and fun roundtable discussion. It was very enjoyable. Hope to have you back, because you and I kind of cover, we kind of talk about a lot of the same thing. And
the same ground, yeah.
A lot of similar tastes I have found over the years. So I think you'll definitely be fun to bring back. But thank you so much for, especially on kind of short notice, jumping on to talk to us about the
is there a prize like a suit or a small appliance I get for appearing on the Space Game Junkie podcast? I hate to ask while I'm online, but you'll just blow me off.
You get the satisfaction of being heard by by dozens, like maybe a couple dozen people.
That's right, and somebody might send you a copy of Masters of Terras Kasi.
Oh, that'd be cool. Or maybe Demolition.
I take it back.
Now, I wouldn't mind if someone sent me Indiana Jones and his Desktop Adventures. That I wouldn't mind. That was a fun little title. I feel like I'm alone in that.
You are.
Oh, okay. That explains the silence. But yeah, Jace, thank you so much for joining us. This was a lot of fun. I think it was a good discussion. It was a good look back and hopefully something of a good look forward. I'm trying to be positive. And Jim, as always, thank you so much for being an awesome co-host, as always.
Oh. Thanks.
And folks, don't forget, you can subscribe to us through the RSS feed or on iTunes, and you can tell us what you think about the podcast either on the comments or on the forum. And thank you for listening.
So my speculation is, in the next Star Wars game, it'll actually be, what were the Kingdom Hearts, right? And we'll have Goofy as Darth Vader.
I find your lack of fight disturbing.